We heard in the gospel today about a rich man who became too rich. He had so much that he did not have any place to store all his goods. I think in modern America, we can understand his problem. Huh? We stuff our garages, our closets, with all sorts of stuff that we will never use again. We even sometimes have storage units when that's not enough, and pay rent to store our stuff that we're never going to use. It's a growing market here in America now. Storage units everywhere. I remember when I was a kid, every now and then you'd see a strip of these storage units in a town or somewhere. Now they're everywhere. Everywhere. To store all of our goods that we typically will never use again. As we drive to these storage units, we may pass people along the road living in a cardboard box who don't have the money for a home while we use that money to pay to rent a unit to store all of our goods. How ironic. Where do we get all of this wealth? Where does this come from? It comes from God. As David says, it is all yours. Everything we have is yours. He created everything. And so everything that we have is simply given to us by God. It all comes from His hands in one way or another. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, it has always been understood that God always blesses us with more than we need. He always blesses us with more than we need. In the Old Testament, a way to kind of put a number on this was called the tithe, the 10%. What the Jews would do in the Old Testament is when they harvested their barley, they would look at it, thresh it out, get it all in their barn, and they would say, God has given me more barley than I need. But I know there was a poor man down the street. There was a poor laborer who helped me harvest. And so God has given me this extra amount to be a good steward. He's entrusted me with something to give to those who are in need. You might say, well, why doesn't God then just give that amount directly to the person that needs it? Well, as you know, there are some that are more wise with their money and wise and careful with how they spend, and there are those who are not. And often, those who are careful end up saving a fair amount, and those who are not so careful, maybe didn't have parents to raise them in the right way to manage their income, end up living on the edge and sometimes homeless. It's not for us to judge why it happens to some people and others. All we can do is thank God that we have a home and a job and food on the table. So in the Old Testament, what they would do is they would look at this pile of barley, realizing that God had given them, every time God gives them something, He's giving them a little extra. He's entrusting that little bit extra into their hands to be given to those who need, who maybe can't manage these things so well, or for whatever circumstance do not have what they need. This was called the tithe. The number they would put on that was 10%. And they did this with everything. Their wheat, their wine, their oil, their sheep. How did they give it to those who were in need? Well, it was distributed in different ways. In some situations, it was just given to the nearby poor man. In other cases, it was given into the temple, and the temple then would use it to take care of those who were in need, or to take care of the things that were needed in the temple. And they did this with everything. Now, when you hear the number 10%, you might think, that's a lot of money. Do you realize how much I make? Do you know what 10% would be? No, I don't. I have no idea. But I do know this, that even the Jews were able to do this in the Old Testament. Now, that is the Old Testament. That is the Old Covenant. And we do not follow the laws of the Old Testament as Jews. That is the heresy of Judaizing, which occasionally crops up in our religious history. There have been various periods throughout the Christian history, the last 2,000 years, where a group of Christians, a whole region, has fallen into Judaizing. And the Old Testament says this, so therefore we should do that. A modern day example of that would be the group called the Seventh-day Adventists or the Messianic Jews, which are neither Messianic nor Jews, but that's for another discussion. That is some modern examples of that. God bless them. Now, so we don't need to necessarily look back into the Old Testament and say, what should we do? In the Old Testament, the law was 10%. And they understood that if they didn't give that back to God in some way, that is, to use it properly, they'd received this in their hands, and to use it responsibly for those who were in need, then they understood themselves to be stealing that from God and from the poor. It was very serious. Now, in the New Testament, I said we are in the New Covenant. This is a New Covenant. What is the law of the New Covenant? Love God and your neighbor as yourself, as Jesus says, and in that you fulfilled all of the laws of the Old Testament. If you love God and your neighbor as yourself, you will do all of the things that are needed. Well, how does that work out for us? Jesus said to the crowds that were around him on the Mount of Beatitudes in northern Galilee, he said, you have heard that it was said to the men of old, you shall not commit adultery. That was the law. But I say to you, so here's the new covenant, if you even look at a woman lustfully, you have already committed adultery with her in your heart. He says, you have heard that it was said to the men of old, this is from Moses, that you shall not kill. And the Jews understood that they fulfilled that law if they just didn't kill. Jesus says, but I say to you, this is the new law, do not even be angry with your brother, for you have already committed murder in your heart. And so I think with the law of the tithe in the Old Testament, we could find a parallel there. Right? We could find a parallel. While 10% was the law in the Old Testament, that was the bare minimum, like do not commit adultery, do not kill, then the law applying that in the New Covenant would certainly be something more significant than what was before. Right? Otherwise, the type would be greater than the anti-type. So then you might say, well, do you mean in the New Covenant we should give more than 10%? No. What I mean, though, is that we need to take seriously what God has given to us and be mindful of those who are in need around us more than the Jew of the Old Testament. That's all. And so what we find in the New Testament is we don't find laws of tithing of 10%, but rather give according to your ability, St. Paul says, for those who are in need. There are today people who are able to give more than 10%, 15%, 20% of their income. I know of one man who's what's called a reverse tither. He gives 90% of his income to those in need and lives off 10%. So how does he do that? Well, he makes a lot of money. Okay? So how do you do that? So this is why I want to make sure you don't get legalistic about this. And it is one of those issues that rises in the history of Christianity. Sometimes people get legalistic about these things and misunderstand. God requires of us the abundance that He has given to us. And that is for you, that is between you and God. I don't know what that is. You don't know what that is for me, but that is between you and God. You know in your life, in your home, in your income, what that approximately is. The number 10, like I said, is a nice kind of at least a marker to think about these things. But if someone only makes, let's say, $100 a month, well, $10 is a lot of money. If an individual is surviving on $100 a month, 10% of that $10 is a massive amount. If someone is surviving on $1,000 a month, $100 is a significant amount of money. If someone is surviving on $10,000 a month, $1,000 is probably a good measure there. If someone is surviving on $100,000 a month, you might say, wow, I'd like to survive on that. Me too. $100,000 a month, you really can't spend it all, right? So that individual will be giving at least $10,000 for those who are in need. Let's say you make $1,000,000 a month. Really? Yeah, here in the Silicon Valley? I don't know what the percentage of people are making that easy. Well, in that case, this individual has been given so much income. God is entrusting with this individual a massive amount of money in order to help those who are in need. In that case, $100,000 is just not even really touching it. Right? So, why do I say this to you? Because I want you to first remember that God does not need your money. God doesn't need you. God doesn't need me. God is God. If He needed anything, He wouldn't be God. Okay? So, we need to begin with that, is that God does not change. God does not smile more the more we give back to Him or to the poor. Nor does He frown. He is always a loving Father. Always a loving Father. But we are to imitate Him, the great divine giver, who has given us this entire cosmos. He has given us our very life. And we are made in His image and likeness. And what that means is, if we do not imitate Him, we do not grow up into his image, as children grow up in the image and likeness of their parents, then we will never be fulfilled. We will never find joy. You will find many people in the world who have more money than they know what to do with and are extremely anxious about their life. They're unhappy. They feel that they do not have enough. There's a hole within them that they just can't fill. And so they buy 5 Teslas, 5 Ferraris, and palaces everywhere in the world, and there's still this empty hole they just can't fill. Because what they're doing is receiving, but not giving. God is one who gives. And if we want to grow into His image and likeness, and then feel fulfillment, feel joy, be who we were created to be, then we need to learn how to give like He gives. Jesus said at the end of that sermon on the mount, He said, you must be perfect for your Heavenly Father is perfect. Be imitators of your Heavenly Father, He says. And so when we give to those who are in need, God is not changing. We are changing. We are changing. And so, how do you give? How do you give? We're talking about this subject because of the particular gospel we heard today. about a man who found himself in just such a situation. He obviously had so much that his barns were full. He was already, it said, a rich man. And now he had such abundance that the only thing he could figure out what to do with that extra, which was so significant, that he would have to tear down his barns so he could store more of it. Well, there was already a problem before that year, before that harvest. We're in the midst of the Nativity fast now. When we talk, as you know, during these times, about prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. God does not need your prayer. God does not need your fasting. You can eat a hamburger on your way into church, or you can fast for 3 weeks before church. It won't change God, but it will change you. Prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. This Sunday, within the fast, I began to talk to you about almsgiving. In the following weeks, we'll talk about prayer and fasting as well. So why do we give? We give to change ourselves. We give to change ourselves, to grow in the image and likeness of God. How much that might be is between you and God. But what I want you to do is meditate upon that and spend time thinking about that. How much abundance does God give you? And how much then are you being given to give to those in need? He gives us everything and gives us more than we need so that we have something to give. It's like a child who has a house, and he lives in the home with his parents. He has food provided for him. And then the father gives to the son a little extra spending money because he knows the kid wants to buy him a birthday present. Right? And this is what God gives to us. Always an abundance above what we need. How do we give? Well, there are two basic ways to do this. You can give immediately to those in need who are around you. There might be a poor man on the street. There may be a neighbor who has lost his job. You can give through monetary gifts, or maybe food or clothing. Who knows what? There are all sorts of ways to give immediately, directly to those around us. What are other ways to give? Another way to give is indirectly. That is, through another organization. Right? So rather than handing directly to that one who is in need, you might choose to give to an organization that helps those in need. There's a wonderful organization, we have information of it in the hall, called Aid to the Church in Need. Aid to the Church in Need. This is an organization that helps the poor Christians in the Holy Land. As you know, there are Christians all over the Holy Land and are persecuted constantly and often find themselves in poverty. The Aid to the Church in Need is a way to give to an organization that has been proven to carefully use that funding for those who are in need. Buying clothing, food, helping to build a church for Christians in the Holy Land. And then there is an organization a little closer to you, and that is your own parish, St. Elias. When you give to St. Elias, first of all, understand this, it doesn't change me. Okay? I work just as you do, through teaching for various institutions online, and there's a small salary through the parish to offset the cost of gas and all those kinds of things. But when you give to the parish, understand that it does not affect me. Okay, and I don't talk about this very often. Those of you who have been here for quite some time know that this is a rare topic. Why is he talking about this? Because it needs to be talked about once in a while. And then I leave it to you for the rest of the year to think about these things. Okay? There's other things to talk about. But every now and then, is an opportune moment to talk about these things. And I talk to you about them as your spiritual father to help you understand the value of giving. The value of giving. What does it help to give to St. Elias? Well, I'll tell you. I noticed that we're starting to not have enough room in here. That's a good sign. We will need to go buy a church someday. God willing, within 6 months or a year. God willing. Inshallah. But we have funding. We have savings. We have been very carefully saving. Those of you who are involved in the finance with the parish know this. Every month we take our collections. It goes into our account. We have a savings account, a checking account. And we are saving for that future, that future goal of buying a building or building a building. But presently, we are not anywhere close to enough savings for that. We're about 10% there, if that. And so in order to get there and be ready and prepared to buy something when we need to, we need to have a regular income, a regular collection that is significant. With that income, we buy, as you know, candles and things that we need in the church, books and things like that, a few things here and there. But the vast majority of it goes into our savings. Goes into our savings. And so I encourage you to be generous, because when you are generous in the giving to St. Elias, it is going to help, again, not me or God. It helps you. It changes you. It gives you also an opportunity of a beautiful place to worship. Now and in the future and for your children and for your grandchildren. It's an investment so that when you walk into church and you see a beautiful building and properly attired with iconography and all of the beautiful things that go into our liturgy, it helps you pray. So that all of your senses are engaged. You might say, well, why do we need gold and shiny things and light and incense? This stuff all costs money. Well, when you walk into a beautiful place, are you not lifted up? I remember one time, and I'll close with this reminder, of a Protestant author. He was an author of about 100 books. Very well-known Protestant author. He came to visit the church at the seminary where I was teaching in Nebraska. They had just finished it. Big, beautiful church. Probably one of the most beautiful in all of Nebraska. And he wanted to see the seminary, and he wanted to see this new church. It was up on a hill, and he would drive by it often. So he came for a tour. And he had a friend who was a Protestant, who was a friend of mine. And so I arranged for the tour, and so I gave him a walk around the place. This very educated Protestant Christian author. And he loved it. He walked through the whole building. He kept saying, "It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful." And then when he walked into the chapel, he came in the back door with his friend, and I was behind them. They walked in, and he looked up. And he said, "Wow." And he said to his Protestant friend, "You see? Do you see what they have done? A beautiful church that lifts your mind and heart to God." He said, "Often we in our churches," he turned to me and said, "often in our churches, it's all about efficiency. Right? It's a warehouse or something like that, a low ceiling to keep the heat down, right? And white walls, everything's very simple." He said, "But we've lost something with that. In the Reformation, we have lost something. The beauty, the concept of beauty. Because when we look at beauty, when we smell the incense, when we see the candles burning, we hear the beautiful chant, we bow and cross with our bodies, our hands. We engage all of our senses. And when all of our senses are engaged, then our mind is engaged. And when our mind is engaged, then our spirit is engaged with the Spirit of God. And at that moment, we are in prayer. We are in worship. In a way that is ineffable. You can't even put words to it. And so I encourage you, this week, if you're married, if you have a family, talk about these things in the family. Find out what is that number, that approximate, and it might vary from month to month. My income varies, depending on what semester it is, and things like that. So that varies from month to month, how that works out. But whatever it is with you in your own situation, figure out what that is, that number, and commit to it. Commit to whatever that is, whether it's 1%, 5%, or 50%. I don't know your situation. But whatever that number is, decide on it in prayer and commit to it. And then trust in the Lord and see what happens. Let us glorify Jesus Christ every day in our receiving and also in our giving. With His eternal Father, as all holy, good, and life-giving Spirit, both now and ever, and into ages of ages. Amen.